and welcome to Conversations on Climate. My name is Chris Caldwell, and we sit down with the experts who are trying to solve the biggest challenge of our time before time runs out.
Hello, and welcome to Conversations on Climate, brought to you today in collaboration with the Yale School of Business and the Environment. We're recording from Yale's inspirational campus, setting the stage for climate solutions going global. We'll share three compelling dialogues with distinguished Yale alumni who are pioneering sustainable change across the globe. Joined by Myra Delgado, a sustainability veteran with a rich background in environmental audit, circular economies, and waste management. Currently, Myra is consulting with the ESG team at the Inter-American Development Bank. Myra sheds light on the significance of ESG in Latin American markets, the pressing need for financial system reforms, and the diverse environmental challenges faced across the continent. Together, we explore each of these regions' most impactful climate narratives of the year and delve into the global sustainability community's efforts to equip societies in developing countries to address the formidable challenges presented by climate change. These were a series of fascinating discussions, conversations that you won't want to miss.
Around 80% of people who listen to this podcast haven't hit the follow button. If I could ask you for a small favor, if you do enjoy our conversations, please do hit that follow button on your app. It would help us in the show more than I could possibly say. Thank you, and enjoy the conversation.
Myra, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us here in the Croon Hall at the Yale School of the Environment. It's a magnificent setting, and it's a great place for us to be able to have this very important conversation.
Greece, thanks to you. Thanks for inviting me. Oh, and I'm delighted to be in this beautiful building.
Wonderful. So we're here to talk about ESG in Latin America and all of the aspects in and around that. But first, could you answer one question, which is, what is the most important theme in your world in climate this year of 2023?
Well, this year, 2023, I would say it is in the spotlight, the intensification of climate-related disasters. We can see, like, at least this year in Chile, like our winter, that is like June, July, we had one of the most intense rains. It was like a period of 3-4 days that completely flooded the central region of Chile, where the main economic activity is agriculture. So you can imagine all the impact that it has. Well, very recently, we had the Hurricane Otis in Acapulco that it just, in hours, changed the strength of the winds and finally became in this huge disaster.
I hope this is the world, this is the year that the world wakes up to climates and the climate emergency and understands it's real because of these impacts we're seeing globally. So your career has been both broad and deep up until this point. You've talked in terms of sustainability, reporting, you've worked on food waste, worked on all things circular economy, and you've worked across various jurisdictions, various parts of the world. You've also had a very international education. Could you tell us a little bit about your climate career to date and how you ended up here in Yale?
Well, I gotta say that this is not by chance that I find myself here, as I said, in this beautiful building at the Yale School of Environment. There's been like a mastermind behind it all because I've been shaping my career to work on this topic that I really love. I'm very passionate about this. Like from, let's say, 20 years ago, when I was in Colombia as a student of environmental engineering, we began to be like to know about climate change, but it was just at that moment in the textbooks with some information about Kyoto Protocol, but not really like seeing that in national strategies, corporate strategies. And it wasn't until that I went to Germany to study an MBA in sustainability management that I had the opportunity, let's say, to visit some renewable energy sites, and it just fueled my curiosity and enhanced that passion for becoming like an actor of change and contributing for my return in Latin America and Colombia. Well, now for different reasons, I ended up in Chile, As environmental manager, I've switched different sectors, as you just said. And if I can find like a common factor is that there are opportunities to integrate the climate strategy in the core business of each of these sectors. Like from the waste industry, there's an opportunity to reduce GHG emissions through waste recovery. Also, power transmission obviously enables the transition towards a net zero economy. Moreover, now that generation capacity exceeds like transmission and storage capacity, at least in the country. More recently, as consultant of the financial sector, there's a direct link because multilateral development banks have signed for aligning their operations to the Paris Agreement. This means that all the financial flows should consider mitigation and adaptation goals. They must be consistent with them.
Okay. And before moving on to multilateral development banks, could we take us back a step? So your undergraduate degree was in environmental engineering, is that right? Yeah. And then you followed up in sustainability. But before going into environmental engineering, there must have been like a moment or a pass that's made you think this is where I want to be. This is the industry I want to be in. How did you make that realization?
And this could sound a little bit childish. I gotta say, you are going to decide if you did this, but I don't know if you remember Captain Planet. That was this comic that was on TV, and I was just a child, and that was like my favorite cartoon on the TV, and I was like, wow, there's a problem, there's pollution, like I really would like to fight that, and. I just think it's kind of inspiring, like having this kind of programs to educate children at that time. And when I was about to enter university, I needed to choose like a degree, and I really had no idea what I wanted to do because I knew that I wanted to do something related to environment. But it wasn't biology or something like that. No, I wanted to do something else different. And it was during those years that environmental engineering started as a program there in Colombia. So I'm one of the first environmental engineers in the country. I think there were like two or three promotions before me. So it was just like the perfect timing to do what I wanted to do. And I really, if I'm born again, I would choose my career. I love it.
Amazing. That's a great story, and it's a great lesson there. That following your dreams from a child, but sometimes the inner child is the right person to be listening to.
I even have a mug of Captain Planet still. Yes, that's where I have my early coffee.
Amazing. Okay, so moving on to like your current work in ESG and international development banks, what brought you there? What impact did you think that working for an international development bank could have?
Well, I think that the role of multilateral development banks at this moment is very important because they are, like in their mission, they're supporting economic growth, but doing that like with a sustainability vision. And this means like, well, in some cases, like teaming up with the private sector to get like financial positive outcomes, but at the same time, like positive impacts with society, community, the environment, and more recently, integrating climate action in that aim for progress.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Mm-hmm. And do you see your career maintaining with international development banks?
Yes, completely. I think that there's a lot of space to enhance the tools that they're developing to help companies, economic sectors, and governments to elevate their standards.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, there's been a lot of kind of criticism about the international financial system, particularly as we were talking about off camera before, kind of Mia Motley at the last COP, bringing forward the really revolutionary, inspirational Bridgetown Initiative, but that was only brought forward because of all of the weaknesses in the international financial system. Mm-hmm. But yet you want to work within this international financial system. Is that because you want to see if you can change it from within, or do you think that it, as itself, it's fine, or do you think, wow, it could be so much better if Prime Minister Motley's plan came forward?
I think we cannot have the mindset of thinking that something is just fine and that it should be always like that. I don't know the first thing or process that just could be like eternal in time. So what I think is that there is an important role, a very relevant, like a way to contribute to this sustainable development of the nations, but there's also a lot of way of for improvement. There is a lot of space for improvement, and with my capacities, my experience, the knowledge of the region, I would love to contribute in that. Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. And within the wider kind of banking community, there's been a push, certainly in a European sense, and I believe in an American sense, although I can't speak with as much expertise on that as I can about Europe, towards increasing disclosures and the pricing of climate risk into the balance sheets of businesses and governments. Is that a development that's also happening in South America?
I am starting to see that, and well, I'm going to talk again with the case of Chile, because this is very innovative in a way, is that from this year, the evaluation impact assessment system has included climate change as one of the components to be evaluated. And what this means, that information, yes, is public, and that every investment project needs to consider not only physical risks, but also GHG quantification. And if we are doing that from the same regulation that it is like environmental assessment, I can see that it's going to spread across all Latin America.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And there's, in the sustainability world, ESG world, there's been increasing emphasis on impact and a broadening definition of impact. Have you witnessed that, and where do you see the evolution of impact and impact accounting, impact assessment going? Mm.
Yes, there's been an evolution. I can see, well, I remember when I first arrived in Chile, it was more than a decade ago, and I could see the huge difference of the environmental impact assessment regulation in Chile with the Colombian one. In Chile, we had a set of a more comprehensive regulation, and such was the success that delegations of Colombia, Peru, they were visiting the country to learn from that experience. But what I could say now, like trending topic in evaluation, I could count like cumulative impacts, the consideration of cumulative impacts, that is like the incremental effects of economic activities or the projects in the same territory. As I just said, the introduction of climate change, we're going to see that on the next years, and also the full digitalization of the process, and this means like having access to that public information that could be a benefit for all stakeholders. But thinking on investors, this is a benefit, like being able to navigate, let's say, through baseline data to better select a site, or acknowledge like the cumulative impacts in the area, or just identify like mitigation measures, best practices. Mm-hmm.
So obviously, across the region, there's so much diversity and so much change from country to country, from individual state, from region, across the economics, mm-hmm. across biodiversity, across governmental states. How do you deal with the risks of mm-hmm. interacting in various local communities?
Yeah, you're right, Chris, and it's just like that. And something that the financial sector, private sector, like, we cannot forget is that there are contextual risks that are not inherent to the project, but that need to be considered because it can affect projects, or projects could exacerbate some of those conflicts. And I would say that as a risk manager, like, those contextual risks should be integrated in the risk matrix of a project, of a company. And I'm talking here about political risks, the violence of a country, like social cohesion, any kind of external factor that can affect the economy. Yeah, and that must be like in the very first analysis for the introduction of a project in a territory.
Okay. You are very close to both Chile and Colombia.
Yeah.
I would like to get, like, two really interesting places, interesting the development things happening there. I'd like to get your thoughts on the kind of the environmental and political culture in these two places. So starting with Chile, we have a new president who is young, progressive, dynamic, all the rest, and is trying to push together and push forward quite aggressively on serious climate legislation. Mm-hmm. What does the ascendancy of climates tell us about the political situation and the evolution of how important the environment is in politics in the country?
Yes, of course. Like, but I would like to highlight that Chile has like a unique combination of factors that facilitate that we have sound environmental policies, particularly related to climate or energy transition, and that they can rely on time. Because, well, let's say, like, we know that Chile, like, main economic activity is mining and energy intensive industry. Also, Chile is not an oil producer. We do have some fields in the very extreme south of gas, but they're not that relevant. Like, they don't produce that much. Also, like, the north of Chile, Desierto de Atacama, Atacama Desert, we have there one of the most important, one of the top places in the world with the highest radiation. Very similar in the south. There are excellent wind regimes for wind generation. And if we see the geography of Chile, we have like 6,000 kilometers of shoreline. And this number is crazy, like 26,000 glaciers. Yeah, we have the most glaciers in all South America. So I see that all this combination of factors, like, we have like there the recipe to craft like very solid environmental policies, and as I just said, like, climate-related policies. For example, that's something that happened with the very first green hydrogen strategy that was launched by the past government, but it's something that now this government has taken the lead on that, and now it has the challenge to show the first products, the results of that strategy that has been shaped for even for former governments. So I think that this is very interesting, that at least in related to renewable energy like issues, Chile is not that politicized. Yeah. There are another topics, issues that obviously took the agenda of a particular government like this one. I think it's been very important, like all the regulation associated to climate change and the introduction in the environmental impact assessment. And the setting of goals, for each economic sector, and that's something that was like that was a compromise of the current environmental authority, and they've been doing that, and I would say in a very short time. Like it's really, it has been really like a good job on bringing those regulations, like making them a reality. Now we need to see the implementation, the tools, but that's part of any policymaking process. Also, they're advocating for broader community participation. No, how do you say that, Council?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah. Okay, and stricter environmental penalties.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And Chile's got a very long and proud history of solar, but particularly for the region, like it really was a trailblazer. Could you take us through the kind of the origin of how it became such a leader in the solar industry, aside from the mere irradiation fact?
Exactly. And that's the answer. The thing is that mining in Chile is located particularly there in the north. Yeah, in the regions of Antofagasta, Atacama, that's the very, very north of Chile. So that's the place where you have the most valuable resource. And there's where the opportunities are for having solar power projects. But something that's very important and that maybe is becoming like an obstacle in that development is that we're lacking power transmission. So as soon as we don't have the way to transport that energy, yeah, we're not going to see the realization of all the projects that are on the folder right now.
So by contrast, in Colombia, we've also got another president who seems to be very passionate about the whole environmental space. However, he is struggling to keep things in the ground, to keep the fossil fuels in the ground, and having much more political difficulty than his compatriot in Chile.
Yes, Chris, and just as we talked before, like the context in this case is very different, and it's very different to the Chilean one. So we can expect the same results. I think that this is like a very good example that in climate action, one size doesn't fit all. And I think that a government like in Colombia need to like select their best players and integrate the relevant actors to have those harsh conversations. And this is all like with the aim to minimize any environment of uncertainty or distrust. And at the end, what I see is that there are some areas that we should prioritize in an environmental strategy in Colombia, such as deforestation, conservation of biodiversity, more resilient cities, adaptation. We've seen some disasters also in Colombia, very important this year, and clean tech for those extractive industries. But the most important is that we need to remember that Colombia's energy supply comes at least in a 70% from hydropower. So like we have that resource there that is so important in the energy mix in our matrix, and I think that one of the most important actions and strategies that we should pursue is the management of water basins. If we do that, if we are resilient against droughts, if we work on avoid water scarcity, we can step away from relying on fossil fuels.
So just as a last question, we've talked a little bit about your background, your international expertise, experience, and your international education, particularly. Would you have any ideas or points of inspiration to give of how you feel that international schools and international business schools, like the one we're in right now, might be able to upscale their impact globally?
Yes. I think I would love to see like more international tours. And I can say that because obviously for this experience that I've had of being different countries, different contexts, and I think that this is so valuable for having new perspectives, for obviously expanding your net, the networking, but it is like a way to even increase that curiosity, be more innovative. And I would love to see, yeah, maybe some tours in places that contrast the local ones. I don't know. I would love to host some fellows in Chile, Colombia, or I don't know, wherever I am in the future.
Amazing, amazing. That's great. I'm sure you have plenty of people trying to take you up on that.
Yeah, you're so invited to Chile.
Amazing. Yeah, no, great. The international experience, it broadens minds, broadens horizons, makes you understand what's really important in the world. So yeah, mm-hmm. fully understand, appreciate that. Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time. That was fascinating, enlightening. Yeah, great.
Thanks for having me here.
Thank you very much for joining us on that conversation. We hope that you enjoyed it. Hope that you learned something. If you did enjoy it, please feel free to leave a 5-star review and to subscribe to any of our channels, and we'll be sure to keep you updated on future productions.
These are conversations that you just can't afford to miss.